The word Yirrindur means now in Batchelor language. It's also the name of Fred Leone and Sam Pankhurst's music project, which sets out to capture what Batchelor life looks like right now. Their self-titled debut album is a crucial piece of documentation, reimagining recordings and stories from across time, and bringing them into the present. This work is grounded in the restoration of Batchelor language. Fred and Sam each have their own rich backgrounds in music, and today they're sharing how they were able to create the big moments we hear on Yirrindur, and what they had to learn. First, this is Yirrindur performing live in the RN Studios. This is their song, Yuangun, by Yirrindur.
Yeah. Hi there, I'm Fred Leone. I'm one of the senior bachelor songmen. I'm Garawa man, Tongan and South Sea Islander as well, from Gela and Tanna Islands. Brisbane-based artist. Other half of Yirrindaa.
Hey, Sam Pankhurst here. Other half of Yirrindaa. I'm a musician.
Now, the word Yirrindaa, which is both the name of the music project that you guys are doing together and the name of the album, translates to now, and it feels like a snapshot of a place and time. Why was it important to show us a piece of what your country, Fred, looks like and sounds like right now?
Right now, the whole sort of, I suppose, urgency behind it is it's not just our community, like Bachelor community. I don't know if you'd call it a renaissance, but there is a time now where Aboriginal languages are being used much more frequently in mainstream music, in the mainstream music industry. And that, I suppose, that urgency has come about because so many of our languages are dying rapidly. Every other week when another elder dies. So to be able to take a language that's, you know, close to extinction and to do the work that my auntie did 40-odd years ago, Auntie Jeannie Bell, to Auntie Joycey Bonner and all the community elders and community members that are bringing this language back and making it strong and giving it a voice for tomorrow, for the next generation. It's just value-adding to what everybody's doing in those language programs in the community, and we're just taking it another step or another level further by incorporating into this beautiful music.
Hmm.
Well, because, Fred, I don't know if you remember this, but the very first time that I spoke to you for Away was in 2019, and you were working on a program at Monash University.
Oh, look out,
recording, yeah. Recording and animating Indigenous languages and knowledge. And I feel like that it has a really similar kind of, we can see that similar idea of contemporizing stories and making them relevant to now. I'm curious how that project informed or influenced the way that you think about language.
I don't know if it influenced. I watched it over a number of years from when it started, and I was always obsessed with how they were capturing these stories and leaving them with the community for the next generation. And I'd always been doing that in music, but then to have the opportunity to work in that field, already be interested in this line of work and have been working on it for, you know, a number of years, several years, but then to go into a program that's got multi-year, multi-million dollar funding and to work across the country with endangered languages was just mind-blowing. Just seeing how dire it is on the ground and being out in communities all around the country and working with communities and hearing the stories. The stories are very similar. So, you know, in terms of like the pinnacle of where colonisation happened, Sydney, that's the starting point and it ripples out. So where colonisation hit and assimilation hit, it spreads out so there's less language and less song. And then as you move out to where Western culture touched in the last 100 years, then it's stronger. But the areas like up in my grandfather's country, up in Garawa country, up Yanyala country, our neighbours, or Mara country, or Wani, Gungalida, Lardil country, all up that way, even up into Arnhem Land, we're only about 100 years behind what's happened here in the city. So it's only a matter of time if these processes aren't put in place now where we're utilising music, utilising every single tool that we can as Indigenous people to keep this language going, and the language's connection to culture, because without the language, the culture can't exist. So it's seeing it on the ground, I think, gave me an extra fire in the belly to want to make sure that Sam and I and every project that I work on has that sort of the foundation. Yeah.
Sam, it's really clear why this is urgent work for Fred, but I would love to hear how you got involved.
Yeah, sure. Well, Fred and I were sort of friends first. We met doing this project during the Commonwealth Games called Spirit of Jurukai. Brian Ritchie, a friend, introduced us. And we sort of just hit it off straight away. Didn't like start playing music together straight away. And then after a while, Fred was like, oh, we should try to do something with, you know, didgeridoo and voice and double bass. And then we kind of tried a few different iterations of what Urinda was, what it could be. So we tried like a kind of band setup thing. We had like a drum kit, electric bass and a guitar and this sort of thing. And it was kind of okay. And then we were doing some duo shows. Would have been for Mona and for, there was a really cool festival called Super Sense Festival, which is in Super Melbourne. Sense, right. Super Sense, yeah. And then we kind of just got put on the spot to do like a 1 hour long improvised set with a quite a clear brief that was meant to be this like droning sort of, sort of drone music sort of thing. So we did that and it didn't really sound like drone stuff. It sounded a bit more like what we're doing now. And we just thought, holy hell, this is like a whole other way we could present these songs if we wanted to. So then we got to sort of putting an album together and it was like double bass and voice. And we got to the end of that and thought, oh, it just doesn't really hit that hard. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was just like didn't sound all that good.
Your hair wasn't standing up when you listened to it.
Fully. You could turn it off easily.
Yeah, you're trying to reference classic albums. Like, does this make you feel like it's a classic album?
It's a very humbling and, depressing activity to get into. If you're ever making an album, just put on something that you love and that other people, there's like a general consensus that a lot of people love something. Put that on. Put what you made on. Holy hell.
If you love it, get
and
rid
then
of it.
Get real with it. So we decided to make the whole thing again from scratch, really, and just explode out everything that was sort of happening between Fred and I, particularly with Fred's voice and also, I guess, a double bass, and just trying to make that like a first principles kind of thing. So we would record Fred's voice first because it sounds amazing on its own. Like all these old songs just sound incredible on their own. It's hard to add anything and make it sound better. So just trying to find sounds more than anything that would couple with it and try to elevate it and give people an experience with it when you hear it that's taking it in the right direction. You know, there's plenty of directions you can go which are not good, but it's hard to find a direction that's good. It takes a long time.
Now,
for me. Sorry.
It's quite interesting to hear that you had a whole album that you effectively scrapped.
Yeah.
Because that is a bold choice to make. Yep. From a creative standpoint, what impact did that actually have once you made that choice to build around Fred's voice?
Huge effect. So I guess, you know, when you've got any degree of training as a kind of, you know, like European background person, you've got this enormous temptation to quantize things into terms or kind of amounts that you can wrap your head around. Like, for example, you go like, oh, this song, it's like almost in a pentatonic scale and it's almost in this time signature. You get into this sort of game where you are shaving bits of information off, so that you can more easily comprehend it, which is actually kind of ruins the whole thing. Like the things that make it special are all the things that are, it's everything about it. So finding a way to take Fred's voice on its own and then sort of like listen into that and find what's in there and what might have come before it. Just like, and that would be from talking to Fred, like, where do these melodies even come from? Like, so there's things to do with that. Sometimes that could be, in some instances, like Birdsong. Could, you know, it's not literally what it is, but there's a track on the album where I came up with this way to get a kind of Birdsong cacophony happening in a reliable way. Because it's okay to come up with an idea, but can you, like, doing it repeatedly is more of like a design problem or something. So we like detune all of the strings in the string quartet and make sure that they're all different to each other, if you know what I mean. So you're like 16 strings across the quartet, none of them overlap. So then when you play natural harmonics on it, you don't get any repetition at all. You get a really big spread of pitch and frequency sort of information, like birds. That's an example. Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine that when you are working that way, it makes live performance interesting, is the word I'm going to go with.
Definitely.
Because it has to be, it becomes an exercise in precision.
Yeah, definitely. We're like one of the only bands you'll ever come and see, which, you know, we're in our set, we have to stop to detune everything.
Fred, I mean, I'm curious about whether there's anything that you can or can't do, like how it impacts your performance when you're working live.
Yeah, breakdancing, I can't breakdance. No, but no, it's there are things like for instance, some of the old melodies, like they are not in a Western timing, so we've had to redo them. And because I'm stuck in thinking that the, you know, for instance,
the dugong ones.
The dugong ones. So the timing, it's not a 1, 2, 3, 4. It's not any type of Western timing.
Because we did the voice first on the album. That one has like a meter. Like the way that the accompaniment works is it never repeats. It just swirls around in an elliptical way with Fred's voice. But when we do it live, we have to shave the edges off and make it into like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sort of thing, which is actually quite tricky, believe it or not.
So a lot of the time with those songs, when we are doing those, if we're doing live, you'll see Sam is conducting, and he's conducting for that reason because... Yeah.
Coordinating people, yeah. You know, like it's a lot to have 6 people watching Fred closely enough to do that. It's not practical. So they're the times when we have to make compromises and find another way. And hopefully it doesn't, you know, take people out of it.
It's really interesting to think about taking that style of song into a new context. We were chatting about Yuengun, which you played a little earlier. Can you tell me the story behind it?
Yeah, it was recorded in 1950, between 1959 and 1959 and 1961, between then, by, I want to say an anthropologist, but I think he was something else, Winterbotham. And he recorded old Willie McKenzie, old Gerbau, and he tells a story of how he was given this song from old Bapadara, Butchler, Songman. So all these old fellas in the 50s, like the last initiated East Coast, Southeast Queensland Aboriginal and First Nations followed, only passed away in the 80s, you know. So it's not that long ago that these ceremonies were being held over this side of the country as well. But he gave that song to old Bapadara, and Bapadara recorded every song that was given to him over a number of years, every paint up that was given to him from all the different tribal groups. And so he had the foresight to leave that information for our generation in the form of recordings and pictures, knowing that it was on its way out and that we were in, you know, deep trouble. So, yeah, we're just grateful that that happened, really. It's deadly. It's really good. It's good because it helps us too to hear those old songs and those old melodies.
If you've ever been to Yerangan as well.
Yeah, if you've ever been to Yerangan up in Harvey Bay. Yerangan's not Yerangan. Yerangan's Yuengun. Yeah. Yuengun, yeah.
So you could listen to Yuengun and Yerangan.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, because sonically it's taking you to these places, but like I think I kind of forgot that it's possible to actually physically go.
Yeah. Yeah. Go there and hang
just
out.
Just like such a...
Oh, they're very real places. Yeah, you can go there. Our album cover too, Fred's niece, amazing artist Mia Bow, she painted that for us. And it's actually painted with ochre and coffee rock.
Yeah, coffee rock and ochre from up home.
Yeah.
So that's some of the colours.
I went up and got it all and took it down and nam to her.
When you are putting together Yuengun, I know you've already kind of told me a bit about how you reshaped that song, but like...
The melody is essentially the same. It's just the timing is...
Right.
It's
It's what's around it that's different. Yeah. I mean, we quite literally did Fred's voice. Like, there was nothing else. So, and then it's the opposite how you'd usually put a track together.
So I'm curious about kind of the different experiences that you each bring to this project. I might just get you to tell me a little about the way that your own background with music has sort of influenced the way you've approached this.
With this, because I've known Sam for ages, and I've known the quality of the work that he's done and the musicianship and who he's performed with over the years, I just had full trust in the process of just creating with him. And so it's so deadly to sit back and then have this album at the end of all of it and have the album exuding this massive impact across the globe. It's pretty crazy. We got a number one on a radio show in bloody Brazil, and NPR, we debuted at 31, independent radio around the country, number one album of the week, a few weeks back.
It's very heartening. Yeah. Even for a non-English speaking album, yeah, but in particular Butchler, it's just so
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, really give Butchler people a big name around the place.
That's incredible.
But I think too, like, it's here and it's now, but everything that everybody's done in terms of, you know, from Yothu Yindi to Uncle Archie and Honey Ruby to Uncle Kev Carmody to Emma Donovan to Delene Briscoe to Honey Lou Bennett, Titters, everything that anybody ever, any influence that was had in terms of song and language has, it's shaped who I am as an artist and a musician. And then I feel like Sam's been around this space too for years and played with many, many Indigenous artists, worked on a bunch of albums as well with Blackfellas, and that's where I think it is. Like, we just took the best of everything, all the best practice models that we've learned in my 27 years, his 27, maybe 30, who knows, however many years, and put that at the forefront of our thinking of, like, you know, we already know what we like and the sounds we like, and we have all this experience, and we're just going out there and doing it.
This is an album that has a very, like, eclectic sound in that, like, there's elements of classical, there's elements of jazz, there's elements of, I mean, it's obviously, like, quite experimental in terms of its textures. Why didn't you constrain yourself to one?
Bunch of genreless bastards we are.
Well, that's a really interesting question, actually. I would answer that by saying there is something about the way, when you spend a lot of time listening to the words that Fred's singing, there's something about the sound of the language that tells you. So I don't know, you can feel when something's wrong and you can sort of feel when it's right. And yeah, we're just looking for things that gave us that feeling of, oh, wow, this is like adding a whole extra experience around this thing. Because, you know, not many people speak Butchler. So for the vast majority of people who are going to hear this album, we're just very aware that they're not going to have access to translating these words quickly. They might be able to if they delve deeper. But really what we'd love for them is to hear it and want to delve deeper, right? So it's...
And how do they delve deeper, Sam?
Well, they can come and see us perform and Fred will spill the beans on everything, which is awesome. And he's incredible. Every night we play, I just think it's amazing hearing about how all this comes together from Fred.
This next story we're going to tell you is the story of Guyu, the fish, travelling up the East Coast. This particular fish is a diamond scale mullet, and it's cruising up the coast, and there's two schools of fish, all the young ones at the front, and then the second school is all the older fish. And we got an old fishing lore story up the whole East Coast about how when the black wattle goes in the flower, you can go down to the water. As soon as it goes in the flower, you can go down the water and you catch fish. But this is a reply to our story, one of our traditional stories, and the story tells the story of Wurrumata Brahmani Kaitawaka in Butchler country. And so when our old people are teaching our young people, and when we teach our young people now how to fish, we teach them how to fish. Go down and look for Wurrumah Brahmini kitehawk when the black wattle, when that flower bud opens. You have exactly 2 weeks in a 12-month window where in that time you're going to catch this fish. And so this is a reply to that story, and instead of it, this fish getting caught, this is our version of the fish just travelling north on their holiday, just cruising north without a care in the world. And so out to the east you'll hear the deep ocean throbbing, and to the west you'll hear the shoreline and the sand. And in the middle of all that mix and that sound and this music, you'll hear the twinkling of your scales, of my scales, as we're the fish travelling up the east coast. This is Guyu. Sound that you hear, your scales shining in the sunshine. Koyo, 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 koyo. Koyo, koyo, koyo. Snapping of the fingers are the bubbles from the fish as they touch the top of the water. Koyo, koyo, koyo. Koyo, koyo.
That was Yirrindah performing live in the RN studios on Turrbal and Yuggera land. Before that, you heard Yirrindah members, Fred Leone and Sam Pankhurst, walking you through their debut self-titled album. You can see Yirrindah performing live at the Courthouse Gallery in Cairns on the 31st of May. You can also buy or stream their album now. We'll put a link in the show notes. You're listening to Away, Indigenous Art and Culture on ABCRN. I'm Rudy Bremer.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.